Hey guys, welcome to Bagged and Boardcast, episode number 555. I'm Chris.
I'm John.
And I'm Paul.
We're a weekly podcast that comes to you in three ways.
Yeah, that's right. The first being the Week in Geek, bringing you the top geek stories of the past week.
Yeah, that's right. The list, the comic books that we are looking forward to coming out March 6th, 2024.
Yeah, that's right. Then we follow it up with our weekly rotating main topic, which this week we're taking a look back at some of the comic books that we read in February of 2024 with the monthly look back.
Yeah, that's right. We drink beers every week.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, well, I'm just trying to keep it alive on the fives, man. 555. And, you know, there was that long pause and I'm kind of took me aback. But you know what takes me back? Drinking Three Floyd Zombie Dust. This was like one of those Holy Grail beers for a while, at least here in Buffalo, right? Like this one of those beers that was really hard to find. People were like, oh, Zombie Dust. Zombie Dust. Was it Zombie Dust or Space Dust?
Zombie Dust.
Zombie Dust.
Zombie Dust. Oh, you gotta, oh. Oh, you don't, you've never had a pale ale until you had Zombie Dust. And it's a decent pale. It's, you know, 6.5%, right? Hard to read, but yeah. 6.5 undead pale ale, really decent, nice. You like, is it Seneca? What kind of hops is that? But it's more piney hops, but not overly piney, not overly resiny, but still really nice, easy drinking. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's a great beer. I think it's a little overpriced for what it is, but it's a beer that I enjoy having.
Yeah, I got it in the variety pack that was marked down, so. So it was about $20 for the 12-pack, a little over, you know, after tax and bottle deposit.
Sure. Chris, what are you drinking? You listed off a bunch of beers, and I'm waiting with anticipation of what you're drinking.
I'm starting off with a sour ale, and from Magnify Brewing, I had one of their beers a couple weeks ago on the show. I had two more last week, and no, I've really enjoyed what I've had, so I saw more on the shelf, so I grabbed more. And I'm starting off with Don't Stop Now. This is a sour ale with cherry, guava, mango, vanilla, and lactose. 5.5% ABV, and yeah, this is very, very easy drinking. The color on it, it's kind of hard to tell on camera here, but it's almost like a ruby red grapefruit juice. Like it's very nice.
It kind of has that cloudy orangey pinky.
It has a nice tropical flavor to it. Like it's a good mixture between like that mango and the papaya. I can't place the cherry, but that could just be rounding it out in a different way. This is very nice. I only grabbed the one can of it. I think that's enough. It's something I'm going to enjoy for drinking, but I probably don't need to go back to it. But hey, you know what? Just to start off a podcast. Well, there it is.
Yeah. Whoop, there it
John.
Is.
John.
In a month from now, we're going to have a total eclipse. And it is going to happen. And we're going to get a great view of it from here in Western New York. And everybody's going crazy for it. So from... Yeah.
Because we're going to be in the path of totality starting on April 8th, and it's going to last for 3 minutes, my friend. 3 minutes and 8 seconds. Total eclipse.
Yeah. We're expected to have a million extra people in our town.
Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be cloudy that day at all.
And all the schools are closed.
Yep.
I'm not going to work. Because it's going to be crazy and they're not expecting us to be busy. But Big Ditch put out Western New York Eclipse, a black IPA. And I was very excited for this because black IPAs is one of my favorite styles.
It's celebrating something I'm very excited for. I picked up a 6-pack of it. I'm not drinking it on the podcast because I'm saving it for April 8th.
You have to drink all six of them in that 3 minutes and 8 seconds.
I'm one skinny shotgunned.
You're going to get totally eclipsed. That's the point of it, right?
Yeah, no, well, you start drinking it as soon as you get the first touch, which happens at like 2. And then the eclipse total, the total eclipse happens for 3 whole minutes. And then it takes another hour for the sun to get, you know, for the moon to get out of the path of the sun again. So I got a good 2 hours to drink all six. One is going to be shotgunned during the totality, though.
This I got 20 cases in and put them out on Friday afternoon. When I came in Saturday morning, I had sold like 9.5 cases. And then by noon on Saturday, I had sold the other 11 cases. Like,
okay, how many boxes per case?
4.
Okay. Because I'm like, wait, how do you sell a half a case? Because I'm thinking each box was a case, but no. Every six pack is a case.
No, so, four six packs
to a case.
Okay. So we sold out 20 cases, 80 some odd units. But I'm drinking that beer, Western New York Black IPA. I understand what they did here, but I was very excited for a Black IPA. I really wanted a great Black IPA. Mm-hmm. And this is a beer that a brewery knew everybody was going to buy it, and they made it so people could enjoy it who've never had a Black IPA. Mm. It's so mild and easy drinking, with a little bit of hop bitter, but not too much, with a little bit of roasty, but not too much. It's good. I like it, but I would like these levels of roasty and hops and flavor are at a 4, and I'd love them to be at a 10. Mm-hmm. Like any good Black IPA, you want that bitter, you want that roasty. It works in harmony. Flavors work in this beer. Super easy drinking. Like, I could crush this beer. Right up your alley, Paul, for April 8th. Yep. It's good that they worked with the Buffalo Museum of Science with this. There's like a QR code that you can scan to learn more about the eclipse. Comes with eclipse glasses in it, which I put on. You can't see anything. They're like blackout glasses. I put them on Grayson, and he's like, ah, there's something wrong with these. They're broken.
Just remember to always check for a safety. They need to have a certain safety rating for you to actually be able to look at the sun with.
Yeah. But it's good. I understand it's made. They knew it was going to sell out. Everybody and their mother was going to be drinking them, and they made it easy drinking. And I've had a couple people come up, ask for more of it, who said, I really like it. I've never had a Black IPA before. So they did their job.
Are you telling them to do beer science and say, like, hey, you know what? We don't have any more, but get, like, this Sierra Nevada. No, we did Celebration, right? That's not available now.
No, we did Old Rasputin with Lagunitas.
Oh, okay. That's what it was, yeah.
And we did, what did we do? Pale Ale? Sierra Nevada Pale with something. I don't remember what now. But yeah. No, I haven't been.
But have you been? Is there another Black IPA that's out there that you can point them to right now? No.
Not right now, no. Man. If I still had some Wookie Jack, I'd give them a Wookie Jack.
Wookie Jack's good. And you know what else is good? Looking at some news from a safe distance, not directly at it. Mm-hmm. Really, really light week. Only thing that we're bringing to the table is we got an update from James Gunn on February 29th, which is canonically Superman's birthday.
Oh.
He's a leap day baby. Leap, get it?
Mm-hmm.
And for his birthday, they announced that they were starting...
Leap over tall buildings in a single bound?
Yep.
That's why.
We're starting principal photography on the new Superman movie coming out from DC Entertainment, and also announced the title has changed slightly. It's no longer Superman Legacy. It's just Superman. And we got a teaser image of the costume logo, which looks kind of like a combination of the Kingdom Come Superman logo, like that kind of like streamlined thinner S with the classic Superman logo, you know, something more akin to what we had in the Brandon Routh Superman one. I forget the name of that. I want to say Birthright, but that's the common.
Isn't it Returns?
Superman yeah. Returns, yes. Kind of like that, you know, nice warm color with like the textures. Good looking logo.
Yeah. I do miss the little triangle at the bottom, you know, to complete the S, because this yeah. this S like flows right into the
shield. So I don't know if you know this, shield. Paul, but it's actually not an S.
Yeah, it's
the Kryptonian symbol
for hope.
For hope. So I'm fine with this. Like it looks
but good. It's also his family crest. So it actually just means House of L, right?
Mm-hmm.
So does the House of L mean hope?
Yes.
Okay. So L means hope. So it's not yes. an S, it's an L.
Yes.
Okay.
That means hope.
So when you say yes, you actually mean Yale.
Yes. Light week for news, guys. can't all be big weeks. Hey, you know, that's fine. Also, people are kind of, there's rumbles because it looks like there's snow on his chest, too. So people are thinking, oh, we're going to be getting the Fortress of Solitude, which isn't a big surprise. But no, now people are getting those like fan theories churning, like what's going on.
And I mean, with all the other people who have been cast and they've done a big table read with the cast, like it feels like this might be a Superman who is established in this world. So, yeah, Fortress of Solitude could easily be there and just something that's there.
Yeah.
You know,
if you have a Superman movie, you kind of want to see the Fortress of Solitude. You know, it's kind of like a big set piece. If you were directing it, you'd want to show off. You want to get a couple art directors to be like, wouldn't this look cool?
Or they're trying to just do it as cheap as possible because they really need this movie to be a success. It's all on the volume, baby.
Yeah.
Anybody got another beer they want to jump into yet? Or
no.
No, because our next beer is going to be a big one, and it's probably going to be two beer night for Johnny.
Mm. Well, I'll crack mine. My next one is 7%. Also from Magnify Brewing. This is Pillow Talk. This is a marshmallow IPA. I'm literally pouring it right now. Ooh. So we'll have to fill some space while.
So I'm guessing that's going to be a very soft beer. A marshmallow IPA.
I'm hoping it doesn't say what kind of hops it's been brewed with. So I don't know what to really expect from it, but I'm expecting some of that marsh to level out those hops a little bit.
Yeah, maybe. You want that marsh to be mellowed.
Mm. Oh. That wasn't a bad sound. The marshmallow, it tastes like Lucky Charms.
Ooh.
It's like that straight up, like spongy, like dense, crunchy marshmallow. I like this.
Well, Chris, while you think lots of beer.
Happy, it's, pleased face.
It's just like a weird, oh my gosh. Like, I'm still tasting it. It's a weird, unexpected, but I should have been expecting it flavor. And I'm going to, after like that lingering taste, I'm going to take another little sip because I'm going to get a little bit more hyper-specific with this. It's not Lucky Charms marshmallows.
Okay.
It's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cereal marshmallows, where they're not as high quality as those Lucky Charm marshmallows, but it's going to be, you know what? It's going to sell some cereal boxes.
Uh-huh. It's the kablam.
I dig this. Again, I only picked up one can of all the beers I'm having tonight, but this is something that I'm going to enjoy the rest of this can while we get into some other stuff. So.
There was actually some other news that I wanted to bring up that I just saw again. Chris.
Already moved out of it, Paul.
I know, but this
let me rewind the tape. Okay.
This is kind of like a Parks and Rec like crossover here with Star Tours getting a new scene with the pergola.
Yeah, they teased this a while ago that we're going to be getting an updated scene from Ahsoka. I think there's also supposed to be another one, too, from Mandalorian.
I haven't seen
I don't know that. If I'm misremembering that, but yeah, they show like a clip of it on the coming soon. This is launching April 6th, I want to say. 26th, maybe? I can't remember the date. I'm excited. It had been a while since I've been on Star Tours, and last time Yanni and I went to Hollywood Studios, it had like a 5-minute wait, so we're like, all right, yeah, we'll go on it. I didn't realize they had added some other new scenes into it where you can now go to the Battle of Exegol from Rise of Skywalker, which is kind of cool because it's like, oh, I didn't even know they had added this in there. Like, this was cool.
April 5th.
April 5th. That was close.
Yeah. So they're saying they're going to have characters that are going to be showing from Ahsoka and or and the Mandalorian. We're going to include locations and characters. But yeah, they did show off riding with the Purrgil. So excited about that. That scene looked cool.
Yeah. I'm always excited when they add something new to Star Tours. I dropped my can. Because I know it does cost money for them to, you know, animate that and program that stuff into your Star Tours vehicle. But ultimately, it's just it adds something else to that ride that's been there for like 30 years now. And if you can keep a ride like that fresh by adding new experiences to it, that's money well spent.
Especially if it's all just simulator and screens, like, I kind of want more overlays, more variety, because like Toy Story Mania, Toy Story Midway Mania, that should have Halloween and Christmas overlays.
They should be adding new games to that like every couple months. Like when they came out with the last couple Toy Story movies, they should have added in new games or new characters from those movies to it. Like, but you know, that's one of those rides where it's usually has a pretty decent wait, so they don't need to try to get people to go onto it. Like, it already has the capacity that it needs. Star Tours, I get.
Because, that's the part of the park that's like, why is this over here? I thought Star Wars Land was over there. At least here in on the East Coast.
No, yeah. Versus Disneyland has it in
Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John, when you come down, is Hollywood Studios on your
list
of parks to go to? Okay. We haven't really gotten into like the plan of attack yet because I wasn't sure how much has been planned or what the attack's going to be.
Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Hollywood Studios. And then we're excited about is we have rideshare because we have the kids. So
Rider Swap.
So someone can go on them twice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we figured, Caitlin, I'll take him on. I'll wait with the baby, then go back. I'll take Grayson on again.
Mm-hmm.
Good way for him to get some fun rides out of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, be fun.
Cool.
Cool.
Does he build a lightsaber?
No.
Okay.
Too young. Maybe like the cheap ones that you can build your little kid ones, you know, the Extendo ones. He's too young to build that and have it like mean anything to him.
He has to wait until he's 40 to go build his.
Yes, absolutely.
Makes sense. Okay.
No, but like if he's like 10 to 15 and we go again or whatever, at that point, and if he's really into Star Wars, I think if we had, when we were booking, and if he had shown as much interest in Super Mario Brothers and the Mario World was in, because the Mario World isn't in Florida, it's only in the California one, right?
Yeah, it will be here when they open up Epic Universe summer next year.
Yeah.
Nebula State. But yeah, nothing yet besides Tokyo and West Coast.
Yeah. So when that opens, that's definitely the place we'll take him next. Because he loves Mario. And we got him some of the Lego Marios where it's like it lights up, his eyes are open, he jumps on different things, and gets coins and does all that. It's electronic. It's really cool, but He's definitely super into Mario Brothers right now. Yeah.
Nice. What was I saying at the beginning of the episode? You wrote it down, John.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's get back into the list.
Yeah, that's right. These are the comic books that came out yesterday, because I'm going to get this edited tomorrow morning because I don't work until the afternoon. So did you guys buy your comic books for the week yet? Because we're in like, Paul. Paul, like, fucking comic books? No, we're talking about comic books for like the next hour and a half, Paul.
No, because I bought two comic books yesterday.
Yeah, come on.
I had my comic books for the month, guys.
Yeah, but I didn't buy your comic books. I bought three comic books today. They were all yours.
But what are you buying, quote unquote, today?
Mark Waid is writing his final issue of his story arc. But it's not really of the arc. It's just one off here. But this is his final issue for Shazam. And we're going to... So, this is so stupid. I hate this. The character's name is now the Captain, not Captain Marvel, but the name in the comic book is called Shazam. It's the Wizard's Shazam. But he's facing off against the Creeper, and the Creeper is a character that I haven't seen in a comic book in a long time. So, hey, there we go. Shazam number 9, written by Mark Waid.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this book. It was all kinds of fun and craziness, but when I sat down and started looking at my comic book buying budget, yeah, I was like, I need to trim some stuff off. And Shazam did not make that cut. And I'm sure the episodes that came out after I jumped off were also a lot of fun. But knowing now that this is his last issue of this book means I probably only missed like 4 of it. And that's not terrible. It's not like I slept on like some super long character defining run on the book, because that's something I can pick up in a trade, or if it goes on sale for like $1.99 an issue, like I can get right back to it.
Yeah, Josie Campbell is going to be taking over the writing duties. Manuela Lupacino is going to continue on art for this series after Mark Waid.
I don't know Josie Campbell, so I'm pulling her up on League of Comic Geeks right now to see what else she's done. Amazon's Attack, iHeart, Skullcrusher. Oh, she did a story in Wonder Woman Black and Gold. Don't know. Was there only that one issue of that, or was that like a series?
I think there might have been Black, White, and Gold. Wait, Black and Gold?
Black and Gold. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. You guys talk about your comic books while I go grab that beer that John wants me to drink with him. And I'm excited to drink because it's a good beer.
Well, John, why don't you kick it off? Because I'm going to ask you guys what book I should be most excited for out of the books that I bought today. And I want Paul there for that discussion.
Sure. From DC's Black Label, I'm going to be picking up the Batman First Night, number 1, written by Dan Jurgens, art by Mike Perkins, and this is the earliest days of the Dark Knight. The year is 1939, and mobsters and crime has risen after World War I, and it's Bruce Wayne going in there to clean up the streets against these brutally evolving mobsters. So I thought it was kind of a fun take. Book looks really cool. I like their Batman logo, First Night.
It's like very Art Deco-y. I don't know if that's the actual design of Batman in the book, but the cover's like really cool. It's almost like a Wolverine type mask bat ears, because they kind of like swoop off the sides.
It's kind of that old school, like a reimagining of that old school Batman mask.
Yeah, it's kind of like pulpy.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping for. It also has been a long... I can't tell you the last time I read a Dan Jurgens book.
He's someone whose name I see pops up on books periodically, and I'm like, oh, Dan Jurgens. Like, Rise of the Superman. Like, okay. Like, and when we do read stuff from him, I'm always like, this is just a guy that likes to write comic books, and he's not a Mark Waid or a Jeff Johns, but he's like next tier down from that. Like, he's someone that's like been in the industry for so long. He's written all of these characters. Like, he's just there to tell a fun story. And it's like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He's your, like, you know, yeah, you got to put in, he's better than a base hitter. He'll get you to second or third base, but he's not hitting home runs.
Yeah, like pulling up
right in the middle.
Bibliography. He did a lot of Booster Gold stuff. He, like, basically, if you've read a Booster Gold comic that wasn't 52, he wrote that. He's like dipped in and out of Superman since the 90s as well. Like, he did something else recently. I want to say he did like a Robin or like an Azrael book. I can't remember what it was, because I remember seeing him on something. I was like, Robin, 180th anniversary special. Yeah.
My pick was the Batman First Night.
Yeah.
Dan Jurgens' 1939 Batman retelling.
Nice. When he has guns.
I don't know if he's going to have guns.
Who did that back in the day? There was like the pulp. It was Batman and then the Doc Shadow. Sampson.
Oh, that was probably like Warren Ellis.
Yeah. And Batman had guns then because he's like, oh, no, he's a pulp character, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because he was teamed up with all those classic guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Chris.
Mm. All right. Pick. So I'm going to throw it to you guys.
We are going
to
pick.
Well, we're picking.
You're going to pick, because I already bought these books.
Okay.
But which one are you most excited to hear me talk about?
Ooh.
Because that will be probably the book that I will pick for March look back. Mm. Because today we had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Last Ronin 2 Re-Evolution number one come out. But then we also had Ultimate X-Men number one come out. This is like the continued
Peach
Momoko, where the entry level character for it is armor.
Hmm.
Which both of these books a little bit more prestige. Ultimate X-Men number one, $5.99, and then Ninja Turtles Last Ronin 2 is $8.99.
Ooh, pick the cheaper one.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay.
I looked at the Ultimate, but I figured that was going to be your pick, Chris, because of the book and the writer artist on it.
Yeah, so this was a very light comic book week for me. Like, when I walked into the store and they handed me my stack, there was two issues on it, because I had an issue of Void Rivals and then issue number 7 of Birds of Prey. And like when she handed me my sack, I was like, oh, light week. And she's like, it happens sometimes. So then as we walked around the store, I was like, I need to get something else. So I saw Ultimate X-Men on the shelf. So I was like, all right, I'm going to grab that. And then they also had the third printing of Ultimate Spider-Man number one, which is supposed to be really good. So I was like, all right, maybe I'll get into that one too. Regardless, I'm very excited for this one. As we already talked about, this one being written and drawn by Peach Momoko, one of my current favorite artists over at Marvel. She's one of their Stormbreakers, they call them now, even though she's been working at Marvel for years. Like, they have to brand it somehow. I'm very excited to get into this one. I flipped through it briefly while at the shop, and she just brings such like a beautiful, like, ethereal style to everything that she does. It was very light on the dialogue balloons, but I'm okay with that. Let the art breathe. Let it tell the story. Because even the stuff that she did with the X-Men Demon Days, where it was like the Japanese folklore version of the X-Men, absolutely gorgeous, stunning, loved it. So yeah, I think I'm going to be all in for this book. And that'll be my pick for March look back. So,
ooh.
So Paul, you now have another book that you're going to need to buy for this month.
Yep. Until some weird rescheduling happens, and then you can't buy it. It's pushed.
It happens.
It does happen. But what else happens, guys?
And now, a dramatic reading from The One Hand, number one, page 32, panel 2.
Sorry. Ooh, that voice made me cough.
Mac, I think our guy, he might have 6 fingers.
And that was a dramatic reading. The One Hand, number one, page 32, panel 2.
You sure that's not a reading from The 6 Fingers? Because that's another book that we read for our monthly book bag.
It's not.
I know. The art style is very different.
Yeah.
Very similar cover styles. Interior art, much different. We can get right into it. Unless you have your next beers that you guys want to get into.
Yeah, I'm ready to talk about my next beer. I picked this up when I saw Paul for a friend's outing. I gave him 2 bottles, and that is the highly limited release of 2023 from Lagunitas, and this is their Willetized coffee stout aged in rye oak barrels, coming in at 12.4%. Always one of my favorites, and this beer is delicious. It's been just sitting in my basement, no chill on it, and it is smooth with just a little hint of a burn, but not like, it's just a warmth. It's not even a burn, and it is delicious. It's everything you want it to be, and it is a beer that I love to share. So cheers.
I appreciate that immensely, because this is a chocolatey, rich, malty meal of a beer. It has that little bit of a burn, like you're saying, a little bit of a hint of alcohol to make you want to slow down. But the flavors are so rich. It's a decadent beer. It's a beer experience. If you find it out
experience.
There.
Experience.
It's a experience. You're right.
Say that word up, guys. Nobody said that before, I'm sure.
Nope.
We got it.
Yep, trademark. Put it on a t-shirt. We got it. If it comes out once a year, I should be more on the lookout for it. I should be clamoring and pestering John, like, hey, is this a month? Wait, is it this month? When this beer's coming out?
Don't worry. Like he said, he likes to share this because... Yep. Last time I got beer from John, he gave me a Willetized, and it was delicious. Like, I absolutely loved it.
Hey, look forward to when I come down in September, Chris. Got a bottle with your name on it.
I did have last episode the Worldwide from Dogfish Head, and I this one's smoother. It's easier, a little bit better than I think than the what is it? The Ubiquitous. What is
Utopias?
It called? Utopias Worldwide Stout. Worldwide Stout.
And that's also like 2 years old, that stout that you had.
Ooh. It was still big. Yeah. So.
Well, that beer is also like 15 to 18%.
Maybe that's why. But yeah, I'm enjoying the Willetized more than the Dogfish Head Worldwide Stout. So that's my thoughts. Chris, did he just finish another beer? You madman.
No, you can't hear you. Did you turn your mic? So, yep.
All right. It worked because I was stifling a cough for a while and I was like, they're going to throw it to me. And I just realized I could have just clicked mute on the screen. I was looking for the button commands to mute it because I'm used to like
Control M, I think.
Control M. Yep. So you haven't seen this yet, so I'm gonna pick it up and take a sip as you guys are looking at it.
Whoa, that's some green beer, and I'm colorblind. I can tell that's some green beer.
The next two beers I have from Magnify are the same style but different flavors. And I didn't completely look at the can when I picked it up. This one's 5%, so again, very easy drinking, but it's called Green Apple Sugar.
Ooh.
This is a smoothie sour ale. And when I looked at the side of the can, after I took my first initial sip out of the can, and I was thinking, like, this tastes like a Jolly Rancher.
Yeah, that.
This is a smoothie sour ale brewed with green apple Jolly Rancher candy and vanilla ice cream. So I'm going to, once again, pick this up and take a sip so you guys can see. Yes. It's like Ghostbusters slime green. And even the head on it looks like you had a like a float. And like the ice cream melted in it. It's like, I don't want to say it this way to sound gross because it's delicious. Like, I absolutely love this. But it looks like there's like curdled milk.
Yeah. It looks a little chubby.
Like, it does. Like, you pour yourself your morning coffee and you're like, all right, let me get my creamer or my milk out, pour it in there, like, and you pour it in and like the chunks kind of rise to the top and you're like, oh, I shouldn't drink this. No, you should drink this. Magnify Brewing, New Jersey. Man, look at you go.
Wait a second. Did they flip that out of the Trenton River?
Maybe.
Is that just scum that they just...
I
Delaware River?
Right, I'm into it because I'm pretty sure it was two episodes ago now when I had the blue milk, the coconut milk, blue raspberry, Star Wars smoothie sour. That was also like a disgustingly thick, vibrantly colored, looking like finger paint beer. I love the Pillow Talk IPA, but I think these weird smoothie sours are where they do their best work, like almost kind of like on a froth level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems like they have like a weird idea for something and they're like, all right, we're doing it. Go all in. And it works so well.
A thing that I like to do is when people are like, oh, I'll get some drinks. What do you want? And you're at a bar. I always like to tell them, like, just give me a blue drink, like anything blue. And it, even at like crappy bars, like they got to make some type of blue drink for me.
They got blue curacao. It's easy to make a blue drink.
Oh, yeah. It's easy.
Yeah.
But one time I did this, and after we were watching like a friend's band play, and after that, somebody came up and was like, man, what did you drink? And I was like, I don't know. She got it for me. He's like, man, I thought you were going to get electrified. And I, great. But when Chris lifted up that green color of his drink, I was like, oh, Chris is going to get electrified. It made me think of that.
Uh-huh. It's so good. And I know when I went to the beer store, when I saw there was more beers from Magnify there, I was like, all right, I need to drink more of these because I've really enjoyed everything that I've had from them. And as I kept seeing more, I'm like, all right, well, it's a theme night. My initial thoughts were, if I couldn't find anything, I was going to grab that, the Guinness sampler pack we talked about like last week, two weeks ago.
The Harp and the...
Because I'm like, these are fine beers. Like, I can sit there and drink these and talk about comic books, no issues. But then after I continued to walk around, there was a monster. It was like hard monsters, but they were like different flavors.
The tea? There's
like three different ones. And then I was like, oh, that's a possibility. I can go for that. But then they had the hard Arizonas sampler packs. And I was like, well, that could be kind of fun to do too. But I really do feel like I made the right choice with coming into this because I enjoy it. But also, when I went down the... like the sampler, like the malt beverage aisle that they have, I'm still looking for those, the Flavor Town punches or whatever they were called, the Guy Fieri ones.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it.
They're going to be putting out a variety pack with like three other flavors to it. So maybe then you'll see that kind of pop out.
Hopefully.
But you don't get anything from Two Roads down there. Right, Two Roads Brewery?
I don't think so.
I
think I might have, but then I memory's foggy because that could have just been something that you gave me that I had. So I don't want to say yes because I think it's no. Because
it's brewed by Two Roads, so it's wherever their footprint is. So if you don't get their beers down there, you might not get that.
You know what? That's fine. Just kill me now.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll bring you down some when I
no, sir, your bag is overweight. You're gonna have to pay $75. Don't do it. Chug it, John. I want you to chug it. But when you crack the can, I need you to say, "I'm getting electrified in Flavortown," and then do it.
Sure, I will
get electrified.
Well, what books electrified us in the month of February?
Main topic, and I was going to throw it over to you to start because we were kind of already segueing into your picks because for the February monthly look back, we're actually doing two books that John
picked. You pick one book. Everybody knows the rules. We each get one. Well, here's the thing.
if Chris hadn't said, "Hey, this has got the same design cover as another book you picked," I probably wouldn't have taken that note until
so at that point, if I read them. Had you read?
You read both of them.
I don't remember what
didn't realize they actually linked up at all.
The One Hand came out first.
Okay.
And that is the kind of gritty detective noir story. And then The Six Finger, the other story. Not really noir. But kind of a
memento-y, like the guy doesn't remember everything, but he's getting glimpses out of it. Okay.
That came out next.
So I read these in the correct order then, because that was like one of the things that we were going to talk about getting into it.
But yeah, these two are connected. The One Hand is a detective story, a detective on his last day of work, about to retire.
1 hour away from retirement. He gets brought back in, too.
No, he retired.
The paperwork is signed.
He ate the frosting. I was there. I read it.
But a serial killer that he's put away twice, but keeps coming back in different forms of in different people, has struck again, and he tells his captain, "Yeah, the paperwork is signed." He goes, "It hasn't been filed. I'm staying on until we catch this guy, whoever this copycat killer is, because there are things in these crime scenes that we've never shared that nobody should know how to do, or nobody should know, and they're here." And this detective who the book starts with him kind of checking out with the psychiatrist, had his cake, papers are signed, he's about to walk out the door where he catches his case and he says, or takes this case to solve this crime. And I enjoyed this book more because I like the detective character more. But the detective's just a blue collar guy. This
is a guy.
This is just,
I like that. The whole thing he's talking to, like, the psychiatrist about, I was like, I don't have a story. There's nothing wrong with me. Like, I grew up in a place where you either work the docks, you sell drugs, or you get signed up at the police academy. I was bad at one of those. My dad signed me up for the police academy. Like, that's my tragic backstory.
Yeah.
What's weird about the setting of this book is it's like 28 something.
Yeah. There's a moment where they're like, but it's the future. And I'm like, oh, interesting. And then it really doesn't impact anything else in the story. Except, it doesn't become like super like cyberpunky, like neon crime drama. It's still just everyone has like CRT TVs. Like they're talking about like watching television. They're not doing like, oh, my Vizzo link. I sit there and watch it. No, like everyone's still like, oh, no, I filled out paperwork. I watched TV.
The woman he's talking to about watching television, though, is a robot.
Yeah.
Is a sex robot who could be like programmed to like live out like 20, because how old is that guy? He's in retirement, so let's say he's 80. Yeah. So let's say 50 years beforehand.
He's probably in his 60s.
No, I feel like...
Whoa, John. You realize the retirement age keeps on going up, right?
But in...
You can't retire until you're 68. Sixth Singer,
which both these books are, you know, shared universe. Uh-huh. The main character of that is working in a battery factory for $15 an hour. So, you know, yes, we're in the future, but it seems like wages have frozen. So maybe he's still 60.
We don't know what the dollar is. It could be the British pound.
On the police force, you put in your time and then you can retire.
But he still retires and gets an analog clock watch.
Yeah.
The future.
The future stuff has nothing to do. Nothing to do with it.
Except there, in the Sixth Finger, he wants to he's one of the options was to go and study 21st century crop rotation. So it's like,
and there's like androids that are working security at the factory.
Yeah,
and the power plant, which swaps out the weird batteries.
And then so the book that connects to this, you follow a archaeology student who wants to go on a dig, who's also a giant asshole, who has this big lecture thing trying to get this grant, works at the thing to clean up these batteries or whatever, second shift. And goes to
that John's talking about this character like he's this character's dad. Someone asked him at like the bar, like, "Oh, what's your son do?" Oh, he cleans some batteries and shit. I don't know.
We were second shift.
Breaks up with his girlfriend, is missing, you know, notes from his lecture, starts to retrace his steps when he realizes that he didn't write those papers. He kind of went into a trance and murdered somebody.
But did he murder, or was he just there writing the ciphers on the wall?
I don't know.
The mystery. And
but he, because he's done some stuff with the toxic waste, he's growing a sixth finger on his one hand.
He calls that one the flavor saver. So outside of there being the sneak peek at the sixth finger in the back of the one hand and them having very similar cover dress, there's really nothing else that says like, oh, if you read this one, you need to read this one. Like, if you're the person that's just, I read this book, okay, I got to the end of the story, I'm closing it, you might not know that there's a second side to everything, and I don't know how much that's going to come into play. And it's very difficult to talk about these books independently after you read both of them, because right off the bat, like, I liked the one hand one more. Like, I want to say it's like the grizzled detective, but he's not that grizzled. He's just an old man. He did his job. He put away.
Not well.
But he did it. Like, he put away. He
put away two innocent people, Chris.
But did he? Or
is that whatever this killer is some type of entity that takes over people?
Like, he did his job. Like, he did his due diligence. And, you know, he gets brought back into it. And I like that. What's his name? Like, Ari Nassim? He's just a guy, like, again, no tragic backstory. His tragic backstory is like, no, I had to like solve this same crime twice, and here I am again. I kind of like that. He's just a guy that's doing a job, like, that's it. I mean, that could change, but, you know, initial reading, I like him as a character. So it's just like the dude that's like, you serious? I did this. Like, yelling at the chief, like, no, when have I ever asked for a case? Like, lose the paperwork. Wait until tomorrow to send it in. Like, I need to do this. If you know anything about me, this is my case. Like, I have to be the one that's on this. And I dug that. Like, I respected that.
And the book had a great noir feel to it, the look.
I feel bad. I need to open it up because what also surprised me is these two books, One Hand and Six Finger, are both done by different writers. One Hand was done by Ram V, and I don't remember the name of the artist.
Lawrence Campbell.
Lawrence Campbell. Thank you very much for that. Because his style is very reminiscent of that early 2000s, like Alex Maleev, like Daredevil style, which I really like. And I latched onto that instantly with this book.
Yeah, and everything in the shadow.
The Six Fingers is written by Dan Waters and art by Sumit Kumar.
And I have to say, Six Fingers, Dan Kumar, didn't do a bad job. It was just more comic booky. Like,
yeah, it doesn't have the same kind of like gritty look to it. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a disconnect, but also
the characters over emote.
They're connected stories. So I get that there's like some similarities, but I'm okay with like a tonal difference in the art because they might be telling different stories.
Yeah, I mean the Six Fingers is definitely the story of a crappy guy who is too smart for his own good, who has to control everything, who is now going to be taken to a situation that he's out of control. Is he going to keep losing control to be this killer or this voice of the killer where he goes into a trance and writes this pictograph or design out of the victim's blood on the wall? And it's a huge, intricate design. But it's two different stories. It's a detective trying to find a killer, and it's a killer trying to figure out, is he the killer? Is he tied into
Is there a different branch of civilization, human evolution that now this killer is actually a part of? And that's the type of writing that he's writing, and it's that civilization trying to call out
the
present.
And his memory is jogged by the art sculpture, by all those arms piled up into a tree or a bloody fountain or whatever.
They're holding blood, but they're also holding each other, the different parts of the body up. And that's the panel that Kate walks in. And she's like, what are you reading? And I'm like, I don't know, something that John wants me to read.
And then her second question was, why is your dick in your hand?
And she's like, I still have never forgiven John about Human Centipede. And I'm like, yeah, I get that.
Hey,
I'm sorry. We
invited you to come watch it with Chris and me with a couple of beers and laugh the whole way through it.
There's no laughing at that movie. It's just bad.
We didn't enjoy that movie, but we enjoyed that movie.
When I'm rooting for the
characters to just drown themselves in the pool so the movie would be over, there's a problem with the movie.
There's a weird fun to watching that movie, not to the movie, because it's not a fun watch. But I still haven't watched this, like the third sequel to it. And it's on my list of things that's like, someday when I'm off from work, like, I'm just going to go get some KFC and I'm going to sit down and watch it. Like, it's like,
well, I don't remember either one. I think you and I, Chris, sat down to watch the second one.
Yeah, the second segment.
I don't think we finished it.
No, we did.
Did we? I think I zoned out during it because I don't really remember it. But
it was riveting. I cannot tell you anything about it, but on the Halloween Horror Nights Reddit, someone made a comment about how they want like a Human Centipede house to come. And it, the whole like thread devolved into people being like, no, this wouldn't be fun. Like, it's not great. And my contribution to the discourse was just like, hey, just like the movie, it's all about the friends you make in the end. Get it? Because their butts are sewn to each other.
Yeah.
Anyways, weird sidebar. I liked the one hand more than the six finger. And I think it's a case of I like that story versus that character. So one hand story, six finger character, because I don't think you're supposed to like, I don't remember
the six finger dude's name.
Yeah. The main character's name. I feel bad, but I think you're just supposed to pay attention more to him than like to what's going on. And for one hand, it's the mystery. Like, it's not necessarily like a character drama. But I like both of these stories together. I think they work well, and I wouldn't be surprised if in like a month or whatever, like whenever this comes out in trade, there's some sort of like collected anthology that has both of them in it, because I think they do read well together, like seeing both sides of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do plan on picking up issue two of both of them. I feel like I definitely would want to stay on to the one hand because it is that mystery, but I kind of want to see where that second issue of the six finger goes.
Have they said how long each of these series is going to be?
I think it says on the cover, like it's one of six.
Okay. See, that's...
I couldn't see that being a 12-issue maxi series at that point.
Yeah, that's like a big buy-in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
$4 a piece, that's $48 right there. Just doing the rough estimate. But I have to say, I was happy. I'm much happier now after reading both of them to have read the one hand first versus the six fingers.
Yeah.
If I read the six fingers first, I would have been so annoyed because I wouldn't. The character's a jerk. I don't really care about him. And it's like, oh, he's killing somebody now? Wait, is he supposed to be the hero of this book? Like, am I supposed to root for him figuring out that he is a murderer? Like, what's the point? Reading one hand first and being like, oh, no, he is the villain. One hand is supposed to is supposed to catch this guy. Like, okay. That's good. If I read six fingers first, man, I would have had a real hard time. Like, the one hand would have been like, oh, I got to read that book. Oh, I got to read that book. Oh, guys, we can get online. Yeah. I can get online. And then I'd be reading that book. Like, that's how much it would have held over me, because I would not have been interested in reading it. But reading it the other way, it works.
I definitely agree. I think that is the correct order to read them. And even like Six Fingers has a like sneak peek at
number two hand, of
but it's one hand number two. So you should be reading them like chronologically.
I feel like you're meant to read them two of the one hand, two of the six fingers, and keep reading them like that. Like, I feel like they're kind of meant to be done that way.
I got to the preview of the one hand, and I don't know what it previewed, because I'm like, well, I got to read the next one, the six fingers now. So I didn't even look at the preview.
Yeah, I didn't even.
Because let me tell you.
It's just a preview of the first two pages.
Of which one?
Of issue one of the six fingers.
Yep. So it's definitely telling you, hey, read this, then this, read this, then this, with those previews.
And I feel like the both series were created by Ram V and Dan Waters, so it feels like they have put this together, these two stories, to work together, like they're writing them together in a sense.
I feel it's really weird that there's nothing on the cover or in the solicitations that say, like, part of this story, like
the
Red Hand Murders, like,
yeah, whatever you want to call it. Or the neo-noir city, whatever their city's called.
I think if you were just, like, picking up one of these books on its own, like, you could still probably enjoy it, but they do read better together, I think.
Well, and the thing is, I picked both these books not realizing
they both look like John books. Yeah. They could not have been related, and you still would have picked both of them.
I did! Yeah. So, yeah, I enjoyed them. I'd read the issues two of each of them, and I might stay on the One Hand as more of that detective story, because depending on where they go with issue two of the Six Fingers, I don't know if I'll want to stay on. Like you said, I don't like the character that you're following, but I think he's meant to be a prick and a dick, too smart for his own good, too selfish, and now he's got to change his life to figure out what's controlling him or what's happening in his life, and it's going to change him as a person, and maybe it changes him to be more of a to really become the killer, or maybe he's just going to slowly lose himself and become the killer.
So it does look like both of these series are 5 issues apiece. Only like up to issue 4 have been solicited for both of them, but they both say with the number 4 penultimate issue. So 10 issues, I think, is still a big buy-in. I don't know. I dig it. I'm interested to see where it goes and like what the reviews are, because I think it's an engaging enough story. Like, we keep talking about him. The asshole guy. His name's Johannes.
I'm Johan.
I liked the whole thing where like he's sitting there with his girlfriend at the museum, and he's like, "No, you brought me here because you need a neutral ground. Like, you're gonna break up with me. That's fine. Like, I understand. I've got like all this stuff going on." And then like she's just like, "Shut the fuck up! Like, even when I'm trying to break up with you, like you're trying to control the situation. Like, let me have this." And he's like, "No, something's going on. I gotta go." And like then he like walks away. I did kind of like that moment where he's not likable, but just kind of like, no, he's on his own path now.
But I mean, even at work when he's like, he puts on the suit to clear out the sludge so he can get his work done, and he gets in trouble for it.
And he's like, no, I only got to hit this many for my quota. And I was going to go, I have plans.
Like, well, you can't do that. And he's like, how many times have you done this? And he's like, I got a six finger. And he's like,
I'm a little stinker.
but he does the I'm a little stinker with this six finger poking himself in the cheek.
Paul, do you want to go?
Yeah.
Next with your book?
I'll go next with my book, Star Wars, Mace Windu, number 1. And this is written by Mark Bernardin and art by George Genty, right? Because it's not, this is, we find ourselves back at the end of the High Republic, before the rise of the Empire. And this is a younger, not
much
quite.
Much younger. That was like my first thing, like getting into it. I'm like, Mace Windu looks, and I was like, oh no, he's very young at this point.
He's a Jedi Knight, right? At this point, he's not a master.
He's not a master.
Yeah, because he's still being sent out on mission, so he's not like part of the council or anything.
Yeah, he's definitely not council. Yeah, but he could still be a master without being part of the council. You know, because that happens.
I mean, it happened to one guy. But also, I mean, there's like Yoda makes like I guess kind of like the Yoda joke where he's talking about how he's still wet behind the ears. Mace Windu.
Yeah. But also because he was on that water planet.
Yeah, yeah, that's the joke.
Oh, is
yeah,
that the joke? I thought, okay, I thought it was more
I think
like,
it's a both. It's a wet behind it, yes. your ears yes. and you just came yes. from the water planet.
Yes.
Okay.
But also, when I read that joke, I was like, oh, Yoda's such a bitch. You're like,
I was like, good one, Yoda. Got him.
And I was like, what a catty bitch. If somebody, if you said that to me, I'd kick him over. Just be like, push.
Did he just get off a water planet?
Well, even like, he's like, yeah, funny, Master. So I got the key back and the droids are fine.
And after this prison break kind of mission, Mace Windu is sent out on another mission because somebody has discovered a new formula for coaxium.
Ultra coaxium, or whatever they call it.
It's nitrous for coaxium, buddy. You think this is Too Fast to Pierce, Tokyo Drift, in space. There's one person that holds the formula, and they want off this horrible ice planet. And they send a message out, hey, whoever gets me off this planet first gets the formula. And the Jedi are, of course, like, yo, this formula, way too dangerous to get into bad hands. Mace Windu, go get her. And antics ensue. Guys, what did you think about this book?
It is one of the better Star Wars books that we have read.
Mm-hmm.
It is way better than the other Mace Windu book where...
Windu?
Windu?
Windu. Windu.
Windu. Where he had to put the team together, and then they crash on that planet, and then it's like, oh, this team sucks, the art sucks, I hate everything about it. But all I could think of, I'm trying to find it, I should have found it beforehand, but there's a Samuel L. Jackson movie that's almost the same story.
Hmm.
And I'm trying to find it.
Again, yeah, that kind of makes sense, and I kind of appreciate that that choice from Mark Bernardin, because
they also created a new formula for coaxium in that movie.
That's weird. Yes.
I generally like this. I think if this had been an episode of Clone Wars, this mm-hmm. would be one of the episodes that I was like, all right, let's go. Like, let me see, like, Mace Windu. Like,
you want this to be like, Path of the Jedi season 2.
I want this to be like just like some badass young Mace Windu stuff. But as a comic book, it's a lot of buy-in. I don't know how many issues this is. Even if it's like 4 issues, you know, you're asking me for almost $20 for the story. I might prefer an abridged version as a animated like episode or like two episode like arc on like an anthology series. Because I do like it, but the whole time, like, the girl with the, like, the formula.
Coaxium tattoo?
The girl with the coaxium tattoo, yes. As soon as they introduce her, I'm like, okay, they're introducing, like, a new kind of, like, smugglery, like, pirate character. I've already had that itch scratched by, I'm blanking her name.
The archaeologist.
The evil droids. What's her name?
Dr. Aphra.
Dr. Alf Aphra.
Yeah, Dr. Aphra. Like, I really like Dr. Aphra, and like, I know she's like operating in the shadows, and at this point she's probably mm-hmm. still a child. But I like that character more.
Mm-hmm.
So right off the bat, like, I'm not into Azita Cruz.
This character has one trait. She runs away.
Cool goggles, and she's always on the run. She's got cool goggles.
And those goggles are kind of cool.
They're like
but then later we get Mace Windu with his like ski goggles on, like mm-hmm. when he's on the ice planet.
Those are actually the this is a crossover with Apple Vision Pro.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
So he's watching his cooking timers. in real time as he's on the mission. I know, I like the story, but I don't know if I could read a whole arc of this, but if this was like a quick story in an anthology comic or like an episode of the cartoon, like it would be one of those episodes that I would probably look back at and be like, oh, all right, we're listing our favorite Tales of the Jedi episodes. Oh, the Mace Windu on the ice planet one's really cool. Like, I don't know if I'm in for a whole, whole miniseries though.
And it's called Quaxium Ultra.
This just makes me feel like, oh, it's Molson Ultra, all the flavor.
I'm thinking of the gasoline. You got regular, you got the premium, and then you got ultra.
What you guys were saying, like, if the water planet was a one shot, and maybe filled in a little bit more, him actually like in the prison or whatever.
Yeah.
And then that same writer did in a couple months like another one shot, which was getting the smuggler off the ice planet. I think those two stories as one shots would be great. And it'd be like, you know what? I'm looking forward to the next Mace one shot. Like, cool. I think this book would work if it was just like Mace on another mission and just being a quick done. It's kind of like how they've been doing the Hellboy series, where it's just like Hellboy 1947, oh, he's doing this. Hellboy 1972, now he's doing this. Like, those have been fun to just pick up and read here or there when they come out.
I think Hellboy works well in that it's a quick one shot. Like, you're going to get like a standalone story, but then 4 years later, oh, the frogmen are back kind of thing, where it's like, it all matters. Like, it's not just a one shot story. And I feel like with a lot of the Star Wars stuff, and this isn't about this book, like, this is Star Wars in general, like, so much of it is just throwing it to the wall to see what sticks, that none of it's going to matter until someone later on has an idea that was like, no, I can find a way to make Mace Windu on the ice planet getting Coaxium Ultra to matter. And they're like, Mark Bernardin, you're a genius. And then they're like, go.
Yeah. Because we've seen that happen with the Ahsoka novel versus the Tales of the Jedi, like, animated thing. The story's different. And it's kind of like, is it left to us now to figure out what is actually canon? Like, is it the book that was said it was canon, or Tales of the Jedi? Well, is that
Paul? Technically, it's canon? All canon from a certain point of view.
Dave Filoni's come out to say that George Lucas always looked at movies and the TV shows that Lucas had part of are canon. Anything else are like tales.
Right, they were never. That was stuff that happened like while George Lucas was just like, oh yeah, I'll get a paycheck
because I'm gonna write a book? Okay,
go ahead. I'll just license it. Versus after Disney owned it, where they said, okay, everything's gonna be like, hey, this is everything else, this is all legends, this is all canon, and we're doing a publishing series, and this is gonna be this is going to be canon. Anything in the video games, blah, 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 in the books, TV, movies are going to be canon. And then suddenly, now Dave Filoni's like, well, some things are more canon than other canon.
Yeah. So you can't be a Star Wars fan and love things, but know that what you pick up on and you do love might not matter.
Yeah, but nothing makes sense. Nothing matters.
That's always been a Star Wars fan because I grew up reading a lot of those Star Wars novels that were like, no, this is the continuation, like the heir to the Emperor, like the Dark
Disciple.
Like the Dark Disciple stuff. Like, I read all those books, loved them all, and then they don't matter because. None of that happens. Like, I am okay with that. Like, I'm just surprised that they haven't pulled on more of those threads from the stuff that did work and people really enjoyed. Like, okay, we got Grand Admiral Thrawn. Fucking great. Amazing villain. Love him. But we haven't got a Mara Jade yet.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of those things, because we're still getting an ongoing Star Wars comic that's telling, like, Luke Skywalker's story, mm-hmm. like, running around the universe. He's got, like, a yellow lightsaber now, because, like, he got, like, a gem from, like, one of the, like, the temple guards when he was on Legends of the Hidden Temple. Like, they're still telling yeah. stories, like... But they haven't, like, jumped into, like, some of that.
Well, he has a yellow lightsaber because the original Marvel comic books, he had a yellow.
It's all bullshit. Yeah. Like, it's.
So they're trying to, like, I think it's a wink and a nod to that versus anything else. Like, yeah.
But all of those were not canon to begin with either, though, because.
Well, then, yeah, they're not canon now.
But even if, like, the books that people liked can't be considered canon. And I think the books that used to be canon but weren't, but now will never be, I think all of that handled the, like, escalation of the Han and Leia relationship better than we had in the movies. But regardless, it's all fake. None of it's real. None of it matters until someone decides that it does.
Yeah.
And then it's going to instantly invalidate whatever you like, your listener, because they don't care about you, they just want your money.
You know what's undeniable, though?
My love for the next beer from Magnify Brewing.
Oh, which I was gonna say that. What's the actress's name? Kat Dennings. Kat Dennings is very attractive, and no artist can deny that. So when they draw her in this book, even though she says basically nothing, it's kind of annoying throughout. I'm like, yeah. She's still cute to look at.
Yeah, I like that. Darcy is such a great character in the Thor movies that they're like, no, let's bring this character into the comic books. Yep. But before we get into my pick, my final beer is the Watermelon Sugar Smoothie Sour. And yes, this is also Magnify Brewing, 5% ABV, but this is Watermelon Jolly Rancher Candies. This one is not brewed with vanilla ice cream, though.
Oh, good.
And I like this one a little bit more. Again, it's very watermelon candy, and that's a great candy flavor. Watermelon's probably one of my go-to, like Laffy Taffy or...
It doesn't look like it has that pond scum on top.
It doesn't, but this one, not brewed with the vanilla ice cream. Yeah. So, like, it doesn't say anything about being brewed like lactose. It just says brewed with watermelon, Jolly Rancher candy, watermelon and strawberry. But this one's also great. I don't know if I like it more than the apple one, because the apple one is like a flavor tour de force, but this is also fantastic.
Good.
But my book for Marvel Comics is Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver number one, being written by Steve Orlando, art by Luciano Vecchio. And this does not need to be a number one. This could have just been called Scarlet Witch number 11, because it's very much just following through with where the ongoing Scarlet Witch story was heading. Because those were all like quick one-shot stories, maybe two-issue stories. That tale's done. Next issue, someone else is coming into Wanda and Darcy's shop. Hey, I got a problem that needs to be solved. Wanda does it. And this one is just, okay, box gets delivered to Wanda's store. It's a message from Magneto. Wanda says, Quicksilver, you don't need to know about this. It's just going to make you feel bad.
At which point, Quicksilver says, I've no need for his absentee opinions. Even him, he says, I don't care what's written there.
And then the rest of the issue is him being upset about not knowing what it says. Which
exactly. Be like, okay, cool. Like, I'll just burn it. Like, after reading it. Like, and then suddenly he saw this book.
That's Quicksilver.
And he's just
so much better than everybody, but it's him always playing catch up. But that's why I think this also doesn't need to be a number one. This could have just been like a quick 3 or 4 issue arc in the Scarlet Witch ongoing. And I'd still be happy with it. Like, I don't have this issue in front of me because this is a book that Yanni's buying, so it's part of her collection, and I don't think she read it yet. Like, I read it just because I was like, it's homework. I have to read this for the show. I like how Steve Orlando writes Scarlet Witch. Like, there's a weird kind of 1980s comic book sense of fun to stuff where it's like, oh, you're coming at me with this, but I can just do this spell, wave it away. But then this issue hits a point where it's like, oh, I can't remember this spell to do this because they're going up against villain I know nothing
about.
The Wizard. Who's a Fantastic Four villain.
He is.
We only know that because we looked it up when Chris picked this.
Yeah, because that was my pick for the list like 2-3 weeks ago. I like this, but if you're picking this up as a number one, it's not a better number one than the Scarlet Witch number one that came out within the past year. This is a good like ancillary read. Like if you're reading that series already, like, yeah, keep going. But I don't think this book's going to catch anybody unless they're a big Quicksilver fan and they need to see more of him in a book somehow. Paul.
Yeah.
Your thoughts.
Yeah, I was left a little confused by why there's a celestial cloud around. Is that hair extensions that she got? Is that like celestial hair extensions?
Just the Letterman character redesign, like her hair fades into like a star pattern and like then so does her dress.
Yeah. I thought it was just a nice artistic touch. Yeah, I guess I was wrong.
Yeah,
you were wrong. Paul's got other question, other need for it.
Well, because he mentions that he's absorbed a chaos god into her, so I'm like, oh, is that an after effect? Like this weird celestial.
It's just a shot of that's.
This is how all
they're drawing her powers.
Yeah, everything that you read in this is them trying to make mention and acknowledge anything that has happened in Wanda and Pietro's lives as comic book characters, because they're characters that people like, but they're always characters that have to get tied into everything else that's going on because they are so entrenched in Marvel history with the X-Men or the Avengers that no matter what story you're telling, it's like, oh, we're telling an Avengers story. Well, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, what are they going to do? Well, we're telling an X-Men story. Well, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, like, they're constant touchstones for so many like families of books that no matter what's going on, it's going to impact them in some way. So they always have to be addressed and hand waved away. That even now, yes, they're not Magneto's children, but because they have to be.
And but Darcy they're not. Helps but then they make that clear.
But then they also still have to acknowledge House of M that happened. But House of M happened like 20 years ago. And did it actually happen? Because it was all hand-waved away from continuity. But comics are messy, man.
But don't worry. Scarlet Witch can still be a hero. Because Darcy's brother has done way weirder stuff.
Has he?
Well, so, that's what Darcy says.
I did enjoy this book, not knowing that there was a Scarlet Witch series that was already going on. But I went into this, I thought, like, okay, stuff's happened before. They're not dumbing it down for me. They're giving me just kind of these two run a thing. They run a coffee shop together. The fact that there is a Scarlet Witch book that is like, every issue is somebody walks into their coffee shop with a problem and they solve it. It's kind of fun. Like, that sounds like a fun series.
I don't want to dwell on it too long.
Wait, are you saying two broke girls in a magic shop?
It is. There's an issue where Joseph comes off of Krakoa to visit Wanda's shop and be like, hey, I'm not your real dad. Your real dad's not even your real dad. I'm a clone of your not real dad. But hey, if you ever need to talk, like, I'm here. Fucking fantastic issue about a character. Again, Joseph, the clone of Magneto from like the Age of Apocalypse stuff. amazing. And like, that's one of those books, like, because, you know, I go to the comic book store every week, I buy the books, and then as I'm like divvying out the books between me and Yanni, some of them I'm like, well, I'm going to read this one first, obviously. And that was one where I was like, she's going to have to read this book, but I feel like I need to sit down and like mansplain everything to her first. But I was like, no, whatever. Like, she can, Wikipedia is a thing. Like, she can get this. The actual series, fantastic. There's like, I think it's like issue number 8 is like a prose revenge story, but like the panels are like full page illustrations where it's Wanda helping like the heir of like a fairy kingdom on a revenge path, like cutting through like all their enemies, and then realizing through that story, like, no, like, revenge sucks. Like, a great series. Those 10 issues are better than this one, though. Continue. Sorry. I don't know.
Yeah, but I enjoy this, knowing that there are other books that are better than this. I probably would go to want to read those. I like the brother-sister in a fight dynamic as somebody who's had fights with family members.
You both have sisters. I'm an only child. Compare and contrast.
But there's a thing, like, I can piss my sister off, she can piss me off. You know, he says that and then he leaves. Mm-hmm. But no, you get into a fight, you get under each other's skin, and then the next day you're laughing about something that is like a family joke, or you walk in and they're watching a show that you like, and you sit down and you laugh together, and like, whatever you guys said, whatever fight you were in, it's kind of washed away because you're brother and sister, and that's what you do. And it just, okay, we just don't care. You know, we just don't talk about that or fight about that anymore and let it go. So that's all I have to say about having a sister. Chris is back with his headphones, so would it be done talking about it? But no, like, I relate to that kind of stuff. It's fun to see these characters. I kind of want to check out the Scarlet Witch book, because it is. It sounds like fun.
Yeah. Legally, I understand.
Just because you have a weird thing about Kat Dennings Ball.
Is
it weird?
I think the whole thing is like, she's cute, but I hate her.
Yeah. But also, he's like making like, I know what TV show she was on.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
That's about it. Like, she's like playing the part of like the knowing audience here in this book. I just don't understand the character in this book. Like, I get her with, you know, in Thor, because she's the like, hey, you guys are talking gibbery joke, you know, gibbery guy, you know, technical jargon that nobody will get. So Darcy's there to like deflate it and then explain it in normal English.
But here is in the WandaVision show, so they're connected.
Yeah.
And you forgot about that.
For all of 2 episodes.
It's like 3. But that's also her kind of purpose in the actual Scarlet Witch book, where she's the everyman character that's there to point out like, whoa, this Amazon walked in an anti-magic armor. Wanda, she's here for you, kind of.
Mm-hmm. She's
kind of thing.
Wong? Jarvis? She's Wong and or Jarvis?
She's the normal person in this universe that has to speak to how crazy things are, but still be in the know, because a normal person in that situation, like, their brain would break. Like, they would stroke out, and that would be it. But here she is, 10 issues in annual, and then a relaunch number 1 later. Like, still working at the shop, because Wanda's the only person that would give her a job. Kind of thing.
Yeah, I was kind of getting, I thought this book was very wordy for what it was. I understand that, hey, you're trying to play upon these interpersonal relationships, but it was seen more like a Wanda / Quicksilver thing, and then Darcy was there just to have weird interjections. So I was kind of getting annoyed. I'm like, okay, you're Quicksilver, let's move this along. And then we get two pages of him being like, I don't want to talk to her.
That's Quicksilver like running across the world like, ugh, I'm so angsty, I hate my sister. And then
She's calling me on the phone? That just takes like a millennia to talk to somebody on the phone.
I like that moment. And then like him just being taken out by like a sniper whose ball is like making him levitate so he can't get like traction. I'm like, he deserves it. He's a dick. Mm-hmm.
And they're coming after Wanda next, and you're like, okay, cool, it's going to happen right now. Nope, it's Wanda and Darcy complaining about Pedro.
But that's how you have a fight with somebody.
Yeah.
You have that thing, you have that fight, and you're pissed off, and if somebody's there, they're going to hear what you have to say about that person till you either get it off your chest or somebody kind of snaps you out of it. To me, that was all real stuff. That's how you have a fight, or you're angry about somebody, and then you talk to somebody about it, and you cool out. You don't just bottle it up, and yeah, that's what Paul does.
Yeah. No, you start having a fight, you realize you're going to be in a fight, you avoid that fight, and then you just let bottle it up that what?
You let it fester.
You let it fester.
And then, you know, 5 years down the road, you just don't talk to that relative anymore.
You just pull out your gallbladder and move on. You know, that's what you do.
Well, speaking about pulling things out, Paul, why don't you pull out your power rankings for the four books we read this month?
I'm going to top of my stack, Star Wars, Mace Windu. Had the most fun with that book. Barely beat out Archie's The Jaguar. For you guys to read. But there we go. Then
Archie's a Jaguar?
Archie's comic.
You were on in like the pre-show stuff for 554 where Paul talked about the book. I don't think you made me read the solicitation, but I read the solicitation. Yeah. And then you continued to read like the first page, and the first page was actually just
the solicitation.
What was in the solicitation, like word for word. So thank you, Paul.
Because
it could have been worse.
I kind of want to check out this book now.
It's not horrible, but it's not good. Then I'm going with the One Hand. It's my second pick. Then Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, number three. And then The Six Fingers, number four. John.
I think I would do The One Hand, Mace, Scarlet Witch, and then the
Six Fingers.
But Mace Windu.
Nope, there's only one hand, Paul. You can't.
But Mace Windu and the Six Fingers are all like, they're all kind of neck and neck. I enjoyed all of these books. And I don't know, maybe.
Okay, so maybe I'm gonna put something out there. And like, I know we talked about it a lot because it was like the first two books we talked about. What if Six Fingers had been a backup in The One Hand?
I probably wouldn't have kept reading The Six Fingers. That's why it's at the bottom of my list as well, though. Like, I'm like, oh, this is
the backup. Well, it's on the bottom of John's, and spoilers, it's on the bottom of mine, too. But again, I liked it in conjunction with The One Hand. Like, I think they're books that you read together, and then they get blended together, like... Mm-hmm. Blended together as that one, but one of them is just stronger because it's, I guess, more accessible.
Mm-hmm. Can we go back to one thing, John? Yeah. How Samuel L. Jackson plays which character in the Star Wars universe?
Mace Windu.
Why do you keep on putting an L in there? It's Mace Windu.
I know. I said it the way I said it wrong.
Okay.
Purpose that time.
Yeah.
Because you stopped the show to be a dick to me because I said it wrong.
I'm just trying to make sure you know what it is.
siblings fighting. I think it's very interesting, kind of telling to our profiles and readerships. We all have different lists, because I went One Hand, and then I went Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, then Mace Windu, and then Sixth Finger. But we all have Sixth Finger.
Yeah, the six fingers.
On the bottom of the list. I'm surprised Mace was that high up for John.
I did enjoy it, and I liked the Scarlet Witch book, but towards the end, when the wizard shows up, I kind of was starting to lose it, because I liked the sibling fighting, I guess.
And that's fair. Another thing I didn't talk about, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver kind of bothered me artistically, because the wizard's hench people, their armor design is like a straight up lift of the Dead Lucky book from Image Comics. Like the pink and like black, like power armor, like a skull on the helmet. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh, that's
the skull on the helmet was a little weird, BB. But I'm liking the new wizard redesign though.
I see. And I can't tell you anything about the old wizard design to notice that there was
a huge helmet, kind of flowing robe, or cape.
And he looked like a man
with a weird goatee. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I think as soon as I saw
the goatee, I'm like, oh, it's a freaking wizard.
Well, also,
it's a wizard.
We also had a conversation about it last week.
We did.
Chris, I was surprised that you didn't pick Thundercats.
So that was originally going to be my pick, because I was very excited for that book to come out. It was my pick for the list three or four episodes ago. I was almost about to say issues, which, again, I don't know why we don't call these episodes issues. Besides the point, I picked it up off of the shelf and I flipped through it, and it looked good. But it looked like, it's
a retelling.
It's a retelling. It's a Thundercats comic book. I don't need to read this because I can tell you what it's going to be. And it's like, I don't want to pay like $4 or $5 for that, and then continue to pay $4 or $5 for it every month, because that's the kind of person I am. So I just made the decision, like, after flipping through, to be like, no, I'm not gonna put that money down. And that's saying something, as someone that was a Thundercats fan as a child. Guys, I'm giving all my money to G.I. Joe in the Energon universe. Because I'm fucking loving that.
And then you're not giving money to the Mighty Morphin Power Ranger universe. You're giving it to the Void Rivals. Or not Void. That's the Energon. Radiant universe.
Oh, Radiant. I feel like that's starting to wind down. I don't know if it's going to, but
it's winding down for you personally.
I don't think it's not for me personally, but I think they've kind of hit a critical mass on it, and they're going to start to be like, okay, let's trim back down, and we might be getting a relaunch with.
But isn't that the massive alt? What's it called?
The supermassive.
Supermassive. So it can't hit. Well, it can't hit a critical mass. It's supermassive.
Well, because Radiant Black, they're kind of coming to the end of their, I guess, like, first big story with the War of the First Ones. Dead Lucky's ending. No One's ending. What was it? Like, Inferno Dragon Red is, like, a one-shot thing. So, like, that character can come back. Rogue Knight's pretty good. But that could also end at any point. So I don't know. I think I think they could be winding down to relaunch with like new characters and new books.
We're not going for it.
I'll be there for it. Like I love comics, and I love comic book universes that I love. And you know what else I love, guys?
Cereal?
Cereal! Yes, because
ratings and reviews?
Well, yeah. I love if you rate and review us. You're not going to. But If you did,
well, because a lot fantastic. Of platforms are really hard to try to rate and re-review, as somebody that has tried to rate and re-review things on other platforms other than iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts, hard to find.
Yeah.
To do it. So hey, just email us though.
Contact BangBroadcast.
BangBroadcast@gmail.com.
But next week it's another Tears and Rain episode, where it's gonna be our favorite cereals.
Guys, you know what's sad though? I just checked the Vegas odds makers. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. If the listeners put down $100 that the Cinnamon Toast Crunch is the top of our list, how much do you think that pays out?
I don't know anything about betting.
I don't know anything about gambling.
$100. They will get back $100 plus if Cinnamon Toast Crunch is the top of our list.
I think because it's expected that it would be up there, that they wouldn't make a lot.
They would have to make a lot of money.
You'd have to vote on something like, oh, they're going to say Apple Cinnamon Cheerios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's one you wouldn't think, but what if it won?
I haven't.
Vegas is saying that Cinnamon Toast Crunch is going to be the top of our stack. It's going to be in the top thing. If you bet $100 that it is, you're only going to get paid out a nickel.
Really?
One nickel.
What about French Toast Crunch? Because I like that one more.
I've never had it.
It's better than Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
It's better?
Yeah.
I'm going to... Okay.
Are those the pieces that are puffed?
No, they're still kind of like that flat, like, wavy
that
design.
But that puffed piece
it's in more
the Cinnamon Toast Crunch, those are god tier. Those are like, you get that, you pull it out of your milk with your bare hands and just enjoy it. Like, you see that puffed, that turtled, that puffed piece.
That turtled piece?
Yeah, like on pizza, you know, the
bubble?
The bubble.
Yeah, I always call that a cheese bubble.
You call it turtle shell?
I had to call it a turtle. Yeah, it turtled.
A turtled.
Turtle.
Oh. I may not turtly enough for you.
Still never seen that movie.
That Master of Disguise?
Yeah.
That's a show.